The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And maybe it should be a little bit louder, or is that, how's this? A little bit louder. So let's see now, is that good? Okay. So, this evening I want to tell a tale. And it's a tale of a village where people lived on the edge of the wilderness, a vast wilderness with steep mountains and canyons and rivers and deserts. But people wouldn't wander into the wilderness, they'd stay in their village. And the people lived there for many generations, and they lived the kind of life that maybe you kind of expect from what how people live their lives. And there was a lot of good and a lot of bad, and people would bicker, and people would help each other, and people would do politics, and people would do the pursuit of wealth and pursuit of each other's spouses and all kinds of, you know, things that go on. And sometimes when the youth grew up, and they get a little bit restless with what they saw, and some of them saw what they thought was a lot of hypocrisy, and some of them saw boredom, and some of them wanted adventure, and some wanted to see some new possibilities. And they were often tempted to go wander off to look for. But there was this wilderness right next door. And they wondered about what would happen if they went there, and what would they find. And to make it a little bit more tempting, there were five paths that went into the wilderness, five different paths. And above each entry to the path was a sign, kind of a name for the path. And one path was called the path of kindness. The other path was called the path of healing. The third path was the path of wholeness. The fourth path was a path of truth. And the fifth path was the path of freedom. However, seemed nice, you know, nice concepts. But a fair number down through the ages of youths had gone off into that, these different paths into the wilderness, only never to return. So people were reluctant to go in there. They disappeared, they vanished, they probably died in the wilderness. And so, you know, we can't go in there. But there was this idea in the village that there was this elder, old person, who was rumored to have come back from the wilderness. But the person, you didn't, never talked about it and never talked about themselves. So they never found out if the person really had done the trip. But there was an extraordinary peacefulness about this person. And people often would go sit with the elder just to kind of feel the peace, feel a sense of well-being, and many times people would just be there and just feel very grounded and present, and a lot of their troubles would kind of fall away, and just, it was quite something to be with that person. So one generation, these five youths, went to the elder, and is there in fact, do those paths go anywhere? Do they lead anything, any place important? And the elder didn't say much, but said at some point, said, well, I can't tell you much about where they go, but I can tell you that if you start down one of the paths, there's only one thing you have to remember. Stay on the path and keep walking. stay on the path and keep walking. So that wasn't much instructions, but they were restless enough and adventurous enough or something, desperate enough, that each of them took a different path. One of them because it felt like the path that was best suited, personally suited, went on kindness. Another one felt attracted to healing, felt that was what the need was. Someone else, wholeness, quest for wholeness. Someone else, truth. And someone else, freedom. So they went off on these different paths into the wilderness. And but they went well prepared. They carried a lot of things they thought they might need. They carried about 40 pounds of weapons. Guns and swords and ammunition and all kinds of things. And 40 pounds of gold coins and jewelry and necklaces of all kinds. Because you never know when you either need to have a lot of wealth with you or need to show off. And they carried with them magazines. All kinds of magazines had lots of glossy pictures that provided hope, all the possibilities that were possible. Different photographs of different places in the world, different things, and because you have to have hope, always. So they wanted to carry that with them, and what was possible, and what they dreamt about. And so they had 50 pounds of magazines. And you know, it was important to have food, lots of food. And the village hadn't heard about freeze-dried camping food yet. So they had about 100 pounds of each of all kinds of wonderful canned foods and all kinds of things they needed. And you need to sleep well because you're going on a journey. So they had 100 pounds of mattress with them. So they had a lot of gear. And so they set off with all the stuff they felt they needed with them. And off they go down the river, down the paths. And as they're walking, carrying, some of them had to put things down, walk 10 feet, put it down, and go back and get some of it more, and just like, you know, stages to bring it along. And it was tiring, they were breaking down the sweats, but, you know, the elder had said, just keep walking. So they were going to walk. And then they came across their first skeleton. And there was a person. It's just a skeleton was left, but it had backpacks and all things, bags strapped on, and jewelry, all this stuff. And they looked at that, wow, person died here with all this stuff. And then they thought, well, maybe I don't need all this stuff. Maybe I don't need the weapons. So the weapons went down. They went further along, and there was another skeleton. This time with no weapons, but just the jewelry and gold coins and the bags and the chests of coins. They were holding onto them tight. You could see in the skeleton bony hands. They were still holding on tight. They're not going to let anybody take it. But they died. So these youths, they saw that and they said, okay, well, let's put down the all this jewelry and money and coins. And they kept going, and they came across more skeletons. This time, the skeletons were just kind of propped up against a tree, kind of resting, I guess, but with their magazines open. And that's as far as they got, stuck in hope and possibilities. But so they dropped their magazines. They carried on. And then they saw these skeletons. And but they were off the trail, off the path. And they could see some of them had fallen, you know, off the path some distance, their hands reaching out for some wonderful thing hanging in the trees off the path. And other ones, you could see they had kind of gone off the path, and they looked like their mouth was still gapping open in fear and their hands up, because the other side of the path, there was what looked like a monster that was crawling around, grouching and crunching their teeth. And they were clearly, you know, running away, but somehow at the path they died there. And the elder had said, just stay on the path and keep walking. And sure enough, they walked, and there were all these beautiful, alluring things on the trees nearby. They didn't go for them. And all these monsters, and they didn't run away. They just stayed on the path. And then after a while, they saw more skeletons that where the belly had been was lots of food just underneath the rib cages of the skeletons. All, you know, it's piles and piles of half-digested food. And they're like, well, all this food we have. So they'd put down their food and started to travel more lightly with food and kept walking. And then this mattress they were carrying, you know, that's not going to work, 100-pound mattress and bedding and everything. So they put it down and they kept walking. And after a while, they weren't carrying all this stuff anymore, and it was a lot easier to walk, and they kind of felt freer and lighter. And after a while, they started enjoying the walking. And they knew to stay on the path and keep walking, but it was just like a joy to walk and with no carrying anything. And then at some point, those five paths came together and they became one path. And these five youth friends from the village saw each other again, and happy to see each other, they became companions on the path. And they started walking, and they really enjoyed the walk. At some point it became very easy to walk, and it was almost like gliding on, you know, kind of very smooth, no obstacles, maybe slightly downhill. Just beautiful, just walking, walking. They had no idea where they were going, but the elder had said, always walk, keep walking. And then at some point, they were walking, and they were kind of almost forgot they were walking. It was so easy, so smooth, so in the walking, they'd become the walking. And there was no self-consciousness about walking, getting anywhere, avoiding anything. They were just walking, it's so nice. And suddenly, with no warning, they came to a big dip in the path, and they just kind of almost like tumbled down, but slid down, just choo. Where are we? And there was a sign. And the sign said, the end of the path. Where are we? What's this about? And so they looked around, and sure enough, the path ended, but there was like kind of a nice meadow that opened up. And then just not so far away in the meadow, there was a sign. And oh, let's go look at the sign. And it said, peace. Oh, maybe we come to peace, Peace Town or something. Peace. And they felt very peaceful. They felt just like so nice and peaceful and settled, and they felt very safe. But the safety they felt was not like they were safe from things around them. They felt that way. But for the first time in their life, they felt safe from themselves. And that was kind of a radical idea. They hadn't realized that they were maybe in some ways their own greatest danger. And so the idea of becoming a safe person for themselves, it was a radical new idea, but they felt safe inside, safe outside, they felt peaceful. So they walked further, and to their surprise, they had returned to their village. And their life was as it had been, except they found how to be peaceful in the middle of it. And so they lived their lives in the village, very peaceful, very safe, productive lives, good lives. And they became the elders who, for whom there was kind of a, who they were, their peace was a gift to their community and great help. So this is an allegory, this story, where you don't go anywhere. I mean, you end up where you started. But then you go off on a journey, on a path. And people who start the meditation path or Buddhist practice, it's kind of a path that you follow. And there are some teachers who say that if you start this path, don't stop. You have to really see it through to the end. But always you just keep walking. Keep going. Don't stop. And stay on the path. And that's like the most important thing if you start this. Stay on the path and keep walking. And people start this, enter meditation or Buddhism for many reasons. Some people do it for kindness and compassion, and that's their greatest need. Some people do it for healing. They're broken or wounded or deeply hurt or betrayed. And so they go for healing. Some people go for wholeness. They feel fragmented. They feel like they're divided against themselves in some way. There's the good part and the bad part, or the acceptable and not acceptable part of who they are, and they're at war with each other. And the idea is to come together and become whole again. Other people start this path in order to discover the truth. They have a real inspiration, love for truth and discovery. What's really going on here? And that's what sets them off on the path. And some people are there for freedom, to become free. They have a sense of liberation and no longer constrained or limited or in bondage by so many things that society and our psychology keeps us caught in. And so keep walking. But some people start the path with so much luggage, so much they have to carry with them. And some people carry, tons of weapons. There's so much resentment and so much anger and so much fear that they're ready to blame and attack and to, defend themselves at all costs. And it's hard to walk this meditation path with all the weapons we carry with us and animosity. And some people end up as skeletons. Some people carry with them their possessions and wanting and all the things that they want to acquire and the things they feel like they have to be and their greed, their desires. And that makes it hard to walk the path. It's heavy. Some people have all kinds of fantasies, hope, what it's all about. Some people have amazing fantasies about what it's like when they become enlightened and float on clouds and everything they touch turns golden and everyone bows to your feet and thinks you're the savior of the ages. All kinds of hopes and ideas that people have about what's going to happen. And that becomes the weight that takes us off the path. It can't really continue, and people stumble and fall. Some people keep looking off the path at things that are safely far from the path, but they get distracted by them. The allure of the world and all the things you can get and want and things and jobs and relationships and wealth and status and all those things, and they veer off the path to pursue those things. Other people see monsters, dangers, and they recoil from the dangers and fall off the path. They run away and hide or something. All they have to do is stay on the path. Stay on the path. Keep walking. Keep walking. And then there's people who are attached to pleasure and food and drinks of all kinds and drugs. And then there's people who are attached to comforts, 100-pound mattresses or whatever, and just and they want comfort all the time, and it weighs them down. And if you want to walk the path of meditation or path of Buddhism, you have to learn how to put all the stuff down. Even if all you do is meditate 20 minutes a day, if you really want to meditate well and really get into it as a daily, regular thing, you have to be able to put all those things down while you're meditating. And many meditators will see how difficult it is to do that. All these things come along. They come along. If you take the path further and, you know, meditate more and go on retreats and make this Buddhism a much bigger part of your life, it's actually more important and sometimes more difficult to discover and put down all the things, the baggage we're carrying with us. And it isn't like you have to put down the baggage. It's not like a requirement. But it's kind of like if you go backpacking up in the Sierras in the mountains, you're not required to go with a light backpack. You know, you can bring a 500-pound backpack. No, you know, so you're welcome, as you wish. you know, there's no requirement not to. But, you know, it's pretty foolish to bring a 500-pound backpack up in the, you know, to go up. Your best, you know, if you really make it, if you want to make it work, you go light. So the same thing with a spiritual life, this Buddhist practice. There's no requirement to put down all kinds of things. However, you want to be able to have the mind and the heart be light, not burdened, not weighed down, not preoccupied by all kinds of things. So there has to be some ability to put things down, to keep walking. And the admonition is, stay on the path and keep walking. And at some point, these things that people initially need, and there's other things besides the five things that I mentioned, some are attained, or something happens, something shifts or dissolves that they're no longer needed in the right same way. But in one way, they're taken care of. And then the path becomes a singular path. It's not no longer a path that's particular to the individual and the individual's needs, but it becomes a common path that is not kind of personal. It's not fulfilling personal needs anymore, but rather fulfills spiritual life or more universal things that we share with all beings. And at that point in the path, we're all walking the path together. And then keep walking. Just do the path. Just take every step. Be mindful. Show up. Keep doing it. And then this idea of becoming unself-conscious and it becomes easy and natural, second nature to do it. And it's such a joy and such a nice thing just to practice and do it, all this stuff, that it doesn't matter if attainment is not so important, getting away from things is not so important. There's nothing to accomplish except to walk the path, just the joy of it. And no self-consciousness. It's like at some point, it's almost like we become the path or become the walking, or the walking becomes us. And then, because of that radical, full-fledged unself-consciousness, this kind of the hooks of me, myself, and mine, the hooks of self-concern have been put down, that allows something to drop away, come to the dip. And a dip that is, in a certain way, in Buddhism, seen as the end of the path. And the primary way the Buddha characterized this end of the path, this state that people attain or experience, how a person is who's come to the end, the primary way it's the person described is a person's now peaceful, has attained peace. Sometimes he uses the word safety. The person has attained safety from bondage, safety from being fettered or caught up. Other times the Buddha talked about happiness, kind of high quality happiness. And then, in some ways, to realize that you're back where you started. You haven't really gone anywhere, maybe, but you're back in a very different way. You're back having put down a lot of attachments, a lot of the burdens, That's another way the Buddha described the ultimate goal of his practice, was the goal is attained in putting down one's burdens, or taking off the load that we carry. And then we're here in this world without the load, without the burden. We're here in the world in a peaceful way, in a safe way. And the only safety that I think is kind of guaranteed or really obvious, or really, you know, you really can count on in this end of the goal, is that you become a safe person for yourself. So there's no tendencies to do anything that's going to cause you inner harm. And along the way, we learn how much inner harm we cause ourselves, where our clinging, our grasping, and our aversion, and our judgments, and fears, and all these things. And that's a remarkable thing, to become safe for oneself. And to some degree, we become safe for others. There's no guarantee, but there's no more conscious intention that we're going to cause harm. And so this idea that people come and visit the elders, the people who are peaceful, the people who are safe to be with, the people whom we can sit with and we feel like we can just be ourselves and just sit there and be disarmed or be open or be transparent. We can just be here because we're safe. And that's a gift that people at the end of the path can give. That's, I think, it's a very important gift, the gift of peace, of safety, of kindness, of healing, of wholeness, of truth, freedom. And the way to that is there's a path. And if you take that path, stay on the path and keep walking. It's a true path, it's a good path, but you have to stay on it and keep walking one step at a time. And for one of the kind of core practices or core aspects of this path in our Buddhist tradition is the practice of mindfulness. There's something very powerful about the next step being clear recognition of what's happening now. And to discover how powerful that is and how helpful it is to clearly, this is what's happening now. It's kind of like when the mindfulness is clear enough and strong enough, that moment the mind is not caught by anything. It was maybe caught with things just before that, but they're clear. There's something about the very clear, wow, this is what's happening now. I'm angry. I am angry. But it's so clear that there's no room for being angry in the clarity of knowing your anger. Greedy, upset, confused, desirous, distracted. Boy, I am really distracted. At that moment, you're not distracted. There's a clarity of knowing, there's a step, there's groundingness, there's freedom in that. And one moment maybe doesn't seem to count for much, but if you string those together and start living that way, it's kind of like you have an umbrella and the water, the rain, just falls off the sides. You have this wonderful capacity to keep walking, and everything just kind of falls off and doesn't stick because of the strength of the recognition. So there's other elements to the Buddhist path, but that's the core one that we teach here, the mindfulness. And keep being mindful. Take the next step of mindfulness. Take refuge in mindfulness. Find your strength and your support in being aware. And rather than going off the path because of the dangers or the desires, the allures, know clearly what's happening. And then experiment and develop what it means to be clearly aware. If you're casually mindful, it doesn't quite work as well as if you're fully mindful. This is happening. And that's a path to peace. It is a kind of peace to do that. So, here we are in our village. And just on the edge of our village, there's a vast wilderness. And there are all kinds of little paths going into that wilderness. And some of them have, they all have labels, names. And some of them have the one that's just right for you. It's waiting for you. And if you want to take it, it's there. It's a beautiful path. It's a wonderful thing to do. So that's the fable for today. The fable of the paths. So we have some time. If you would like to make any comments about that or questions or direction, more directions how to do the path, you're welcome to ask or speak up. So if you can mic out to the on the edge there.
I can
project. No, but then some people won't hear you anyway.
Can you comment on how to put down
the burdens, all the weight? It helps if we really know that it's if it helps when we really know how heavy it is. So sometimes it's good to stop and get to know it well, get familiar with it. And if you really get to know it, see it, spend time getting to know it, get to know it so well that you see the shortcomings of it. And then it's easy to put it down. Sometimes it puts itself down. But some people try to let go of things or put things down before they've gotten to know it.
I was wondering about boundaries and
boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So following a certain.
Can you hold
path.
A little bit closer because I have trouble hearing.
Sure. So following a path, I think there's a boundary that's already set for you, but I wonder, without confining, how do you set boundaries? You know. For other people or for yourself, against other people, and against isn't the perfect word, but I hope you understand the idea.
That's an important topic for people, the question of personal boundaries and how to maintain appropriate ones, how to dissolve the inappropriate ones, the ones that are fortresses. And so one thing about the path is it's, that as I talked about it today, it's a metaphor. And there is actually no physical path that we're talking about. The path only exists for you when you walk it. And it's in the walking that the path is made. And so the walking it is to really inhabit something and really act in such a way or that you're grounded and present in your experience and in yourself. And so in terms of boundaries, it's very hard to be in interpersonal relationships when there's neediness and demands and pushing and everything. If a person is not grounded in themselves and able to stand on their own two feet and really know what they're experiencing and be able to feel the confidence to say, stop. Take our time. Let's find out what's going on here. Let's talk about what's going on. And so, one of the and that's hard, this is a hard skill to learn. And that's, But that's what this path of mindfulness is pointing to, is a possibility to really start knowing what's happening here with me. Am I grounded? Am I standing on my own two feet? Am I really centered in this situation? Or am I being pushed around? Am I leaning into someone? Am I pulling away? Am I closing down? Do I get confused? Do I feel inadequate? Do I feel unworthy? Do I feel like I'm undeserving? Do I feel like I'm the one to be to blame, and therefore I need to accommodate and make all kinds of things? What's going on here? And so to be able to take centered stand and stand upright in a dignified way, and then track and see what's going on here, all the inner voices, all the things that are going on, is the beginning of knowing how to have healthy boundaries. If you just set up walls without understanding yourself, that can kind of backfire. Does that make sense? So get to know yourself.
Is the awareness that one has without the thought of my individual self, is that a permanent or impermanent
Is the
situation?
Awareness that has no self-consciousness?
You know, you had mentioned the awareness without self.
Without self, yeah.
Right, so the self, I assume, means the individual. So is that awareness permanent or impermanent?
I don't know. I appreciate the question. It's not a question I know how to answer, because it's a question about the nature of reality, about the nature of consciousness. And in Buddhism, we're not so interested in those kinds of questions. They're interesting questions. We're more interested in the process of freedom. And so as we're conscious, do we find out how to be consciously free and not caught and not suffering? And that's enough. And an actual nature of what consciousness is, what awareness is, in some absolute way, like is it permanent or not, that's really not a particularly interesting question for the purposes of becoming free of suffering. Believe it or not. So, but it's a very unsatisfying answer, I'm sure, for you. So I'll try to give one that's a little more satisfying, but not so satisfying for me. And that is that we don't know what awareness is. No one knows. We don't know what consciousness is. You go to Stanford, you know, go to people who study consciousness, and they have many definitions of it, many understandings. It seems like every decade there's more books being written, and now they understand what consciousness is. They have new theories. No one knows what it is, really. And but in one's experience, which we, from Buddha's point of view, we look at our experience, it would seem that it's possible to have an experience or a sense of awareness is always operating one way or the other. Sometimes it comes along with a lot of self-consciousness. Sometimes it comes along with desire. Sometimes it comes along with different shapes and colors and forms. And sometimes it's unburdened and unshaped by the conditioning of the mind. And so you could say, you could theorize that awareness, as long as we're alive, there's a kind of awareness that's more or less kind of constant. And in addition to that, there's all this extra stuff we put on top of it. So that's one. I don't know if that's any more satisfying, but I think to try to theorize any better than that, I'm pretty reluctant. You going to try again?
Just to follow up, from the practical viewpoint.
Yeah.
From the practical viewpoint, so when you're meditating, one part of it is negation of sensations that are transient in nature.
Uh-huh.
And the other part, occasionally you may feel this awareness without the sense of the individual I thought. So uh-huh. In a practical perspective, should one focus on that state of awareness
uh-huh.
or on the sensations
oh, nice.
Or do both?
Great. A nice question. At different times, different parts of those are useful as a focus of attention. So it depends what's happening overall, and also depends on the particular meditation technique a person's following. and where they are kind of in the stages of meditation practice, the answer would come. So I can't give you a definitive answer to your question. Those are all options, and you have to use your wisdom or guidance to know, you know, which to do. The general approach here, and the kind of meditation practice we do here, is the default is to bring your attention to whatever is the predominant experience of the moment. So we're not negating anything, like negating sensations. We're not rejecting anything. And when the practice is really strong, we're not even letting go of anything. But whatever is the salient, whatever is predominant experience of the moment, that's where we bring our attention to. And there are times when the predominant experience of the moment is consciousness or awareness. And those times, that's where the attention goes. Other times it's in sensations in your knee. You know, some people who start meditating are surprised by how many sensations you can have in your knee if you're sitting cross-legged. And so that's where your attention would go. And part of the benefit of that, of going to wherever's predominant, is if you don't go to what's predominant, bring your attention to what's really happening, and then you're easy to set up a tension between what's calling your attention, what's loud, and versus where you think you should be or where you want to be. And that tension sometimes is okay to have, but it kind of makes it makes the whole process a little bit more complicated and agitated. Is that adequate an answer to you? Are you satisfied well enough, or do you want to ask again?
Later on.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Okay. So, anyone else? One more?
So in the tale, Gil, when people leave the path, they always end up as skeletons.
Yep, yeah. Watch out, Robert.
Right. So my question,
how many skeletons have you had so far in this lifetime?
Now I'm in trouble. Okay, so the question is, is it possible to leave the path? That's a serious question. Is it possible to have a sense of leaving the path and then coming back on the path, or do you just leave the path and
that's forever?
That's not a satisfactory answer.
So this path is a very if we take the metaphor of path as it's a little more, you know, it's at its face value, then it's possible to go off the path for decades, right? Years and years. And some people never find their way back. However, once the decision is made to start in the path, it turns out it's only a step away. It's not very far away. It's just the next moment to be mindful and clear and show up for this. It's just a step away. And the path is very forgiving. The path doesn't care how long you were distracted and lost and off the path. The path doesn't care what you did when you were there. The path just is happy to have you back. Welcome back as you are. And you don't have to carry the burden, oh, I made the wrong choice and the wrong decision, or I wasted my years, I wasted my youth, could have been practicing, I wasted, you know. The path doesn't care. The path is so happy to have you back in the next step. And so don't carry the path with the past with you. Just start again.
No, that's a satisfactory answer. Thank you.
So thank you, and I hope that by telling this teaching in terms of a little fable, maybe it's a little bit evocative for you to kind of see how it might be a match for your own life and your own how you live, and because it's suggestive enough to allow for many, many possibilities. I'd be curious to know, if you're in the village and decided to take one of those paths in the wilderness, what the name of your path would be. Great. Thank you.